on Thursday, the 15th, 2023, and we will talk over the board meetings, the meeting of the Board of Commissioners for the Highland Village in Boston, the meeting of the Board of Directors, the Office of Affordable Contracts and Public Facility Corporation, the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and the South County Public Facilities Corporation Board of Directors. And with that, I'll ask Mr. Gregory to call the roll call.
Commissioner Duncan Hall.
Present.
Mr. Anastola.
Present.
Mr. Carrington.
Present.
Mr. Bailey. And Chairman Richie.
Present. So the forum is here. It's been officially called the order. At this time, I'm going to ask Mr. Anastola to leave on the plate to leave.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Next, public communication. Are you no problem with the time to speak? Right. There's no one who has signed up or anybody in the audience who'd like to speak, but it's not signed up. So why don't we move on next to the Citywide Advisory Board update?
Sure. So please, if Lupe Garcia could be here again, so is it with us?
Hello, everybody. I'm always happy to be here. Excuse me, my name is 1.3, the number of meeting. On meeting to order, but I've been on the possible this. I said the different for the citywide because our paper is 11/2023. Laura on the Aspen, there's a motion to accept the minutes. As well, I'm the Garcia president, also accepted a motion. The treasury report was done by Dallas, $2,892. President Benjamin was Frank Garcia, a family spokesman for the for Long Group, Courtney Rose, North Bay, Shadow Bend, and Georgia Maine. The encouragement business to call 911 for safety concerns and considers targeting and preventive program. Hospital Pathway Subways with Alani, committed with the final to the Women's Conference, was 41 9-month graduates. From when the parents, they may have it and on the change. And why did you see? But thank you, please. Ask the legislature, I will continue to enforce or address any concern on a case by case basis. I believe COVID 19 vaccination clinic will pass May 19th. And with CBS Mobile, Medical Board, the Mayor, and Vernon Cooks. Robert Jackson, some of the leadership boards in Roseville. In Wakes at Chalmers, Medical CGW. And CIS for Golden Rose Medical and San Marino, Creative Actions, Auto Tech, and STEAM program. Murphy Golden, Common Training and Development Program, PCC Automotive and Steel Point Alliances. The Electric and Global Financial Aid Ability. Catherine Cradle, Google Fiber Available for North Properties, Norman Heights, Georgia Mayor, North Gate Entrance, but still helping residents sign up for the affordability connected program and educating residents on the line safety and security. The two winners is also using five death with Daniel Reese, a resident who attended the Chase Financial Journey Business Program. Property updates, there were none. The meeting was adjourned by law of press complaints, motion to adjourn the meeting 11:53. And then we have a steel business, vice president, second the motion.
Thank you, Lupe. Commissioners, I think it'd be hard to overstate how impressed I think all of us were with the Women's Humanities Conference that we've been able to piece together. It was an extraordinary effort. I'm proud of the Pathways team and hope to come together to help assist with the challenges of putting that together. But literally, 150, 200 women came together, including one of the most moving things I've ever seen in my time at DACA, seeing 40 plus women who were graduates of this year's IMOS class, walking up many of whom have never worn a cap and gown before, being honored by all of us. And it was really a joyful thing. Lube had an incredible array of speakers, including Mayor Bill Watson. And it was just a lovely, lovely thing. Congratulations to you.
Thank you. It is always an honor to be able to represent Papa and to be it's more like a blessing to me, y'all, because it's been a tremendous amount of many years at my work, but I'm honest. And I do want to say one thing is that not only my moms, but the parents of my moms, because there were three generations graduating, which was the mom, which was the grandmother, the daughter, and the grandmoms. So some of them came all together. So that was amazing. And so now the IMOMs, there's 10 IMOMs taking an auto class to be able to be certified for vehicle inspection. So we're on the go. We're not just doing secretarial work. We're going to go out there and we're going to do some big time. And the next class is going to be at Tulsa, where they get trained to work on making vehicles or making something with vehicles. So the ladies are really, really, really pushing forward to other jobs besides in the field office. And that's my goal. Those are my goals for right now. And
in between becoming a budding TV star. Are we allowed to catch air that?
Yeah.
So Lupe has been invited by NBC Peacock, one of the streaming services at the NBC Universal Network, to do a All About Lupe kind of.
It's about community work
and involvement. Put a little bit of focus on it, which is very exciting. And we're
exciting, and it's an honor to represent Powell's with y'all president. That's mine. But I do have an announcement. We'll be representing, and we're going to be out at the parade Saturday. There'll be like maybe 10 and 12 IMOM. We're going to pass out water and then some bags and stuff. And we'll be out there telling Tiffany and Sandra who are out there. So we'll be out there doing our community part. And then we're also going to be doing a little, like a fundraiser for one of the IMOMs. And so, also kind of.
I'm delighted to hear that they're branching out into those what many people consider not women roles. But I just want to remind all that historically, World War II, when all men were off the war, the women were in the factories and they built the cars and they built the tanks and they did all of that. So it's not a new concept. We're just coming back into our own.
Pretty true, because even the ones, the ladies, the Tangarita in 1937 and 38, they knitted the sweaters for the soldiers at Santa Rita, and from there they were boxed, sent to the post office, then to England, and distributed to the soldiers. So Santa Rita and the ladies are now living this year.
Thank you,
sir.
Let me just say a couple of things. One, congratulations on the conference. I know it would be phenomenal if you're involved in meeting that very goal. In terms of, I had the opportunity on Monday to give speech at an airport vendor operator conference. And these are airport directors around the country, engineers, architects, construction project engineers, and they were in different women and more Hispanic businesses. And any woman from Austin who worked at Austin Airport, she's an architect out there. And she was telling me how very excited about the expansion of South County. And he said, well, one of the daunting challenges they have is they have 360 vacancies. And so, if you ever thought about, you know, something Because when you said ABA, without me doing the car inspection, I was thinking that's great, but then the government decided to go away with it. You want to pull the car inspection. So all of a sudden, that, you know, you feel applied at something, but aviation is something you ought to think about. There's a way, because again, the city has the need to ARPA to make 360 positions vacant. And so I'm sure there's some sort of training that people could go through to get those jobs. Maybe working with the airport. A buddy of mine actually runs the World Airport. And that's what, when they got a contract to a company, they required them to make sure a certain number of folks in the job are women in the mornings. And they take them to a training program. So they'll help them get trained for a specific position for that company to do that. And then give you something to give you color. That is, with the expansion of the airport, there's a tremendous amount of job in that country because they're all of a sudden, there'll be new airlines starting to secure will expand, they'll be needing employees because, you know, you can bring in flight attendants in the airport and pilots from different areas that the folks who made the airport run today that basically have their gear. And so that's something you may want to consider in terms of dealing with Mike and Gloria having to say at the city level, those jobs in your.
There's many jobs we can give icons because my whole goal is within 2 years is for them to be self sufficient and for them to be able to buy their own home. So, right now we have four icons that are in this program and they're buying their homes. So that will be definitely something else that we do.
We'll try to reach your command.
Yes, thank you so much.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Well, Commissioner, I would suggest we turn to a consent agenda on the Honda consent agenda. Honda regular board meeting agenda. The only item that's on is item number one, approving the board and summary for meeting held on April 20th, 2023.
I entertain a motion to approve the minutes from board member of April 2023. There's a motion by Commissioner Oxville, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Victor, what do you want to go next?
We refer back to item on the presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding number 2806. Approving a contract renewal for Canada LB Care, which provides resident service coordination to elderly and disabled adults, Riverside, Monkey, and Castle Park.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. This is yes. Today I'll be doing a presentation on behalf of Canada LB Care. We have some slides here that I'd like to refer to regarding the annual contract renewal. For this particular renewal, we are speaking about the service coordination that's happening for LBD properties in Warren Blue, Lakeside Gas, and also Salina. And just so as far as context, Family Healthcare Care has been a part of our office since 2009. So they've had a lot of experience with our residents. And just wanted to sort of break down the main areas we can focus on the services we're providing to our residents, and first one would be the community research referral. David, I think you can read through the slides. I'm not going to call them, but they are basically supporting community resources, and they are almost serving as educators and also navigating the process. And many of all know Medicare and Medicaid, a lot of this could change. Many of our residents have to either sign up again or re-sign up again or complete an application. Otherwise, it would lose that benefit. There's a lot of outreach education. Everyone for our residents. They're also important advocating for our elderly and disabled communities. For this time around, with the new CEO, Dr. Erica Lapone, with other rich programs that they are providing to our residents, they also started what is called Rainbow Connections, which is a new program that will also provide some advocacy and research to the elderly community. And so that's something that is new. They have launched a program and I'm learning from them about any trends or what other needs that we need that we are not aware of. So we're also getting approved from their service coordinators. Of course, our service facilitator, they support residents with benefits. They gather documentation. They monitor programs. And we also co-write grants with them. But we care to make sure that our resident services are not just basic, but that are more robust. One being, of course, in COVID-19, we did co-write a lot of those grants in order for Austin Public Health to vaccination clinics to our elderly and disabled communities. Of course, they're also community builder. Actually, for the senior manifest, which happened last month, our keynote speaker was Dr. Erin Manafon, and he did speak about aging in place, the importance of movement, and also the great partnership that Austin has with family elder care. And I will turn on to the next slide. As you all know, there are other sort of outside of a contract that family elder care also provides. There are three full-time service coordinators at the elderly sites. We have one that just left, so there should be one at North Loop, Gaston, Spalina, and Lakeside. The Lakeside coordinator just got promoted to that Rainbow Connections, Healthy Connections program, and so they are hiring one more person, but we do have a 40-hour-a-week service coordinator on site. They provide 402 residents through service coordination programs. So as you can see, often families do provide resident services, but sometimes we do not have the key expertise that is required to deal with mental health, you know, sometimes drug abuse issues, and that's where family elder care steps in. We also attend all the resident council meetings. And also, these contracts include the grant funders in partnership with the Hoffman Family Elder Care. Right now, Family Elder Care is subsidizing one of our contracts, which is the Employee Service Coordinator. So, in addition to these four service contracts, we also have a Employee Service Coordinator held by Sharon Harris. And she provides elderly and the civil age support services for our HACA family properties. But today, we're going to focus on the elderly properties contract. For to find as far as the final slide, what are we last slide? So these are other services not contract funded, but they do go above beyond their call of duty. So one is the direct client services. They have every time they submit a grant, they do have a clause stating that it will also support HACA residents, and so we do benefit from the grant writing and awards. They provided in 2002, they provided over $60,000 in assistance to residents. They do also provide the reduced fare bus fare with Capital Metro. It's either free or reduced bus fare for our elderly disabled residents. And of course, I just mentioned the Healthy Connections and engagement. I think that concludes the presentation for family elder care. So now I would like to kindly ask for the proposal and the possibility of renewing the family elder care contract for 2023-2024.
Before we pass off our motions, I'd like to say we're on a quick one about our case. So we're talking 122,623 for the main contract.
Right.
And then we saw the outstanding issue that we could bring that before for the service coordinator. Your initially Natalie and Sharon's very prominent for the service and support board. And so I wrote one of the work there. What's the difference of what the materials provide when you're to serve the two that?
So right now, with the subsidies, we're only in charge of $9,887 total amount. We do have a grant right now, which will end on March 31st, 2024. So if HACA is interested in continuing the services, the food service for year, that's the amount $90,000. Right now, the difference, there was an increase, like difference from last year to this year, they went from $78,580. $90,000, which is a $4,000 difference, which amounts to about $1,000 more. And that is to really speaking of inflation and then just the cost of being in Austin. And so for this particular resolution, we're asking for the contract. But as Mike brought up, we had several meetings negotiating with family elder care, and then Mike has met with Dr. Elephant. And so I don't know, Mike, would you like to propose to move on, but that is the difference. It's $12,000 for this year, but for the next year, it's $90,000.
But we build it in a lot of line now. So is it 122,623 plus 90,000?
That will cover all the elderly properties as well as the family home service coordinator with Sharon Harris with the other family properties for elderly.
And that would take it to March 31st, 2025.
Correct.
So the commission would really like to revise the total cost because we feel like there was that voting coordinator role. And then Jarrett's had great continuity with our residents there. And we think they would be very helpful to continue that. So we would like to authorize the staff to work with family health care up to a total amount of $213,310 among these various tasks. And Philia and I will work in line to make sure that we're pacing it out, at least kind of board approval for all family health care contracts to get us given this next year.
I'll look to Commissioner Becky Hall for motion to remove the current item on the so Commissioner Parent, I mean Commissioner Becky Hall offers an amendment to item number 2, which would be 28,006 to increase the contract amount of $122,623. By
$90,000.
$213,310. So with that, the motion made, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Carrington. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the motion carries. So now we're back to the new motion that's been amended. All in favor of so I need a motion to approve item number 2 of the
meeting. I move approval of resolution number 02806.
So Commissioner Duncan Hall makes a motion to approve the amended resolution. Commissioner Costello seconds the motion. Any discussion? And then all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Anyone who wants to hear it?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I would like to ask Leonie a question.
Sure.
Given that we have these four elderly properties, do the residents get a chance to go beyond the properties or new properties to get involved in intergenerational activities? You know, like mentoring children or reading children, that kind of thing. And if so, how often, and is this something that we could increase so that it's a more robust activity?
Yes, that's a good question. There are other activities going off site. For example, they do have activities where they take trips, let's say, to the next seventh and critical center, or maybe it's to go to the Chibido Wall. So there are programs where they work host of them. But in general, family elderly services for them. So for example, there's a first Christian church. Well, instead of them going to church on Sundays, they'll come and bring service to them. And so there are those enrichment activities, but more than likely because of the transportation and mobility issues, more of the community partners actually come along. But there are a few, like for example, during the holidays, we took our elderly to the nonprofit location of LA Austin. So we do have other control, sort of age appropriate and mobility appropriate, community events that we do on a residence basis.
But I'm really trying to put in this whole idea of intergeneration because our elderly is really a very valuable resource that I don't think we're taking advantage of. And especially in working with younger children and even the parents. And we know that we still have a literacy problem with parents who cannot read to their own children. So I'm looking at that kind of thing. And even though I know this is a wonderful program and we need to have people who are in these sites where it is easier for them to obtain services. What can we do to so that we are getting that kind of interaction among the
We can definitely inquire with the elder care, and maybe that's also something that I moms could take on as a volunteer project to do some type of a multi-generational project with our seniors. and tap into that knowledge and connect them with maybe some type of tutoring opportunity. So let's look into that. We do have a lot of all that with grandparent program. And so what we do is we do place us out of the schools and we meet with the children. And then the IHOMs, for the IHOMs that come that have a disability or a walker or wheelchair, I give them certain projects, like making picture frames and all that, and then we deliver those out into the nursing home. So we include them all of all ages in the IHOM, as the grandparents are also joining their granddaughters to learn more about how to be a community person instead of just staying at home. So this week I gave 2-4 IHOMs that project where we're gonna go out and buy picture frames, and they're going to paint a picture, and then we will deliver those out in their behalf. So we do have a little bit going on for the IHOMs, the same numbers.
I also wanted to have last year you approved $100,000 to bring home the support program, and that is in full effect. We have both clubs across all of our properties, and we're not seniors reading to the children. I mean, it's a partnership of Book Spring, where we're going to receive the contract, made a contract, and then went to an Austin Public Library. And the book club started actually this summer. It's really in full effect. It comes to all of our properties, including all of the properties as well. That's thanks to your contribution to us. So it is in full effect.
Now, I know we were doing something with that. I just want more. I mean, really.
We're sure to figure out stuff with family over here. Oftentimes, family over here is days working for one week, but if you really are struggling to age in place, and some of the needs are more competitive, you know, and more than people have to be so struggling with that thing. Hoarding issues, kindergarten issues, there's a overlap of things that are very challenging that they do. And that's what makes the partnership. Where they have further investment, we're seeing more and more places. We're challenging, let's say, by the 80 parts. And that's part of it. I'm delighted by the book frame and the properties in our book, traditional life, they have Saturday and my Chalmers, where we can create partnerships and have, you know, the very nice, you know, senior living in a store who's able to, you know, provide some tutoring or, you know, or provide. That's winning in all end, and that's just more effective community than the neighborhood. Commissioner, with your permission, I'd like to jump over to the Austin Affordable Contractors PLC. That meeting's already been called in order. There's no public comment. And the only item on the consent agenda, the only item on the agenda is the action item, which is the approved resolution number 1, filed the order of the right to be on supportable contractors for the PFC, to get compliance and separation, doing ratify the formation of the PFC, and organizational analysis. So, you'll recall back in February, you approved this new PFC corporation, named again on supportable contractors, both social corporation. This is the tool that HACA will use to protect our liabilities as we want to serve as a general contractor for new construction developments. We have a resolution that creates officers for the group and creates bylaws. So it's fairly straightforward to submit with other establishments of other community liability corporations that you've established. And we would recommend your approval of this resolution. Well, Andrea, I thought it would be better.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, I'm the one who uses this for the
contents. Would there be a motion to approve? That's not
number
1. Hello. If your parents do it, you're trying to fill a second. Very good discussion. All in favor of that?
I have a question before we vote. So the resolution is up in the articles incorporating it in the Northern Power Secretary of Police Office?
Yes, they have.
Okay. And
so by that, Commissioner Carrington moved to approve. Let's go ahead and spell a second. All in favor, very further discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. And Commissioners, there's one further item that's come before Austin Affordable Contractors at PSC. We need a motion to adjourn. Commissioner Carrington, please, Commissioner, I'll spell a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. And Austin Affordable Contractors is adjourned. Thank you. So now we'll go back to Ryan. Well, want to go to AAPC at this point? Or we want to do the
what's that?
I'm going to offer up.
We're going to do the summer on the PSC and then do the AAPC.
Yeah. Right. So we're going to go to the staff conference. You want to see it first. And
yes. Is there any public communication to South Commerce PFC?
No one signed up.
Okay, hearing none. Then we will move on to the consent agenda for South Commerce PFC, which is to approve the minutes of the April 2023. Mary Bowes. Seconds. Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? The one action item for the South Conference PFC is resolution 00015. And this is to authorize South Conference PFC to purchase certain property located in Austin, leave the land at the airport crossing, and execute union all documents necessary and desirable to achieve a financing and the financing of this development. With that, and Susan, you can see
a little bit of background on this property. We worked for clients for over a year when we bought it. You can look at the office in 2021. We presented it as a 4% tax credit in bonds, and we submitted for the bond lottery at the end of 2021. We did not get bonds at that time. We went on the waiting list and were not able to get bonds until the end of 2022. By that time, prices, construction costs had gone up so much, labor had gone up so much. We had huge gaps that we didn't have any way of filling. And so we decided that we were going to have to go another way. However, four of our other properties needed supplemental bond issuances. So under the rules of the VRB, if we held the bond reservation that we got at the end of 2022 over into the beginning of 2023, that issuance stayed with Austin Affordable PFC, the issuer, which was ours. So we turned the reservation back in for Airport Crossing. We got $50 million under Austin Affordable PFC to use on our next projects. You saw that I presented a couple months ago four different projects, Bridge and Wheel, pathway that comes with Bridge 18 in View and Norwood Estates for supplemental issuances, which we funded along with all of those. And it was because of this project we were able to get those extra issuances. A couple of them had problems, but they're 50% test, which is really huge in the tax credit world. So we were able to help those projects, keep them alive, and keep them in built by us. Now we'll turn back to Airport Crossing. The only way we could get that property to work is to go convert it to a workforce housing project. This one is 9.43 acres, and it's off of 6101 Rosewood, Ross Road. It's in the Dell Valley School District. And if you can kind of pull it out just a little bit so we can see.
Is this along 71 or new?
There's the airport up there.
Yeah, the airport is there. You take.
This is Toll Road 130.
130. Yeah, it's off of 130.
This is 130.
71 or 973.
Nidia knows. I just drove up. Nidia knows. Nidia drives this.
Yeah, 71 and 973.
Yeah.
And then,
it's off of 973. It's out, but it's on the 71. And as I said, it is in the school, Del Valley School District, Farland Elementary, Del Valley Middle School, and Del Valley High School. But it is in the city of Austin, the city limits, even though it's served by
the Del Valley. Yeah, but the zip code, I was just trying to figure out what was going on with that.
Yeah, it's out towards East 71. This property will be 256 family units. It'll be comprised of one and two bedrooms. 10% will be at 60% AMI, 40% will be at 80% AMI, and then the rest will be at market rate, which will be, around 100%, between 80 and
100. That's what I'm having my problem with. I don't remember having this discussion. I'm pretty sure I didn't miss the meeting, but as I look at this now, we're talking about over 50% of the units want the free. The next largest category, 102 units, 80%. So there's really only 26 units in this entire place that's 60%
Right, and that's pretty standard for the workforce housing.
Okay, so, and in order to talk about this, this is not what we call affordable housing, this is workforce housing?
Well, it is affordable housing, it's just kind of a model that's considered workforce because it does include market rates. And that area,
I'm talking about a huge percentage of market
rates. Let me just jump here because the market rate, and that's what I want you to do is to explain that term, because in terms of market rate, I think Tara, and when I read it, I was thinking market rate as
a downtown.
No, I was thinking in terms of somebody who probably makes about 50 to 60%, and they really are the workforce. I consider the workforce, but that's more of a white collar, high end workforce. That's why I want to kind of define what you're having a workforce. Because I think that's what's going to go off. When she thinks about, 80% of market rate workforce. So, in terms of workforce, is that, when you're saying you're making $70,000 and that's kind of the slightly above the median income for the job and office. So, if you could kind of walk through that, I think that'll help there sometimes.
Yeah, and out there, we're not going to get like downtown Austin market rates. It's more of, I would say, just right above the 80% area median income. And I should have done it.
Let me just refresh my memory. 80% market rate, 80% AMI is for a family of four, $88,000. In income, which is pretty high, and I don't see that area as being that.
Well, yeah, you've got like the Tesla people that they make quite a bit. And
were they there when this project was beginning?
You think about. The other, so you got Tesla, and all of a sudden now you got other companies who are moving in that provide services applies to Tesla, and so those are higher income jobs. And so, you know, I 80,000 is a lot of money, but it's, when I think about Austin, what Austin is today, it's kind of run of the mill.
Yeah, I'm having trouble with the terminology affordable.
Right.
I really am. It's a problem. And if you could convince me that we have to have more of these in order to have what I would call the deep reduction that you do talk about in one of the projects today, which I was very pleased to see. And yeah. I'm saying I'd love to see how we can structure more and more of those. But if I have to pull my nose in this one in order to have those others, then I'm willing to do so. But I just, I'm not feeling good about it.
So, what I'm saying is, $88,000. $88,000 two years ago. I mean, you were, you know, sort of higher, you were the higher, the upper end of the middle class. $88,000, you may be cracking the bottom, because if you think about what housing prices are, you know, and again, this is awesome, but this is not what you could do if we were in Lakeville or San Angelo. And that's the thing that's hard to wrap in my head. That's what's hard for me to wrap my head, my mind around it. But I do think that's what helps me come back in terms of $88,000 is a lot of money. But at the same time, when you think about what the cost of having all of them, you see that about $5 years of principal ignorance.
Yeah, well, and also there's not out in that area, there's hardly any apartments out there.
No.
And that's, they're all single people that are owning. So you don't really have any alternative for people that just work out there and don't want to purchase work hands. No, you know, a bit starter trying to save up to purchase. So we've got an influx of people. It's really not that, if you drive it, it's really not that far. I mean, I was out there like that. And a lot of people are moving because they can't afford what I call market rate downtown.
Sure.
All of our workforce housing, the term I use, they are specific to the area they're in. So this one may not, you know, your market rate may be at 80%. It may be at 82%. Some other area like Steiner Ranch, your market rate is probably going to be, you know, right over 100%. So we make sure that we price them according to the area so that we can really get those people that don't have vouchers that need it. Also, there's one other apartment complex right there that is a tax credit card apartment. And once their people get at 60.1% AMI, they have no place to go. And so that's what we want to be able to capitalize on, you know, partnering with them, making sure that the people that start out at 60% and work hard and get raises, they're not penalized for it. They're able to stay in these units. They have a place to stay when they put their roots down and then have, you know, they're going to church, their kids are going to this school and stuff. We don't want them to all of a sudden go, okay, our only alternative is to buy a house that's $400,000. No, we can't do that. So we've got to move back, you know, closer into Austin.
So Suzanne, let me ask you a question. So what would be the average rent for that person?
Are you talking single person or household?
If you have two bedrooms, what would be the average?
I don't know.
It's in our package.
I pulled something last night. It was 4222. The rent for a 60% two bedroom was 14,800. At 80%, it's 19,800.
So you would have to make, also for the line of 14,800, you would need to make at a minimum of 45,000 a year. Am I correct? 3 times a month.
The income.
So usually the rule of thumb is whatever your monthly rent is on your unit, you got to make 3 times the.
Well, we're also income qualifying, so the minimum income for one bedroom would be 65,000 or
50.
For an 80%, and for 60%, it'd be 49.
I guess what was bothering was the volume of units that were market rate for in comparison to 26 units in 60%. It was just so unbalanced compared to what we've been doing.
So yeah, it's
a POC, and so the difference is the POC. You don't have as much affordability, and that's one of the knocks on the POC. In fact, I had to listen to this discussion painfully during the legislative session. So that there's a bill that got passed. I'm not sure if it wasn't something different, but it would require far more affordability. It would mandate by law far more affordability than what we are able to negotiate. This is a negotiated deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what they're doing is
that was for homes, right? Not rental units.
No, this is for
it was for rental units.
Yeah. Okay. So now part of the deal is you're get the developers got to pencil out because you got to put the vendors out, you don't make it. With POC deal, and that's what we have done. So this will be number 5. Of all the deals we've done, we've only done. If we were to approve this, this would only be the 5th PMC deal we've done. And that's because our standards are going to be affordability are high, and that's why we don't really do that. And so this is more of an exception because of all the issues before. And so in terms of putting together the capital stack to make it work, if I'm reading this correctly, that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's correct. Very certain. So this is anchored one part of what we are trying to do is to get cannabis. And you're absolutely right. Well, every deal has to stand on its own.
Right.
So the third is on the offset, the illegal offset, and the all that has to stand on its own. We wouldn't build another property like this, in close proximity, but we think that there's so little affordability out there that it makes sense for us to anchor this. The problem with this deal is, and the reason I was not about myself, but the reason for bringing this deal with Colbert is that we've tried, we love the site, we love the location, it didn't make sense to be able to be there. But once we lost the bond reservation and then moved the bond reservation or the way on tax credit, then suddenly we're looking at a different financing structure. And then how do we reposition that property to be able to meet affordable needs, but not put it right now, that we're not maybe a subject is the offset and give the people a little affordability. So much like the other board that we did, we think it makes the benefit of being there exceeds the benefit of not doing the project. And so in this particular case, we think they're getting 26 affordable units at 60%, getting 102 units at 80%, that will sort of again literally that workforce housing. It comes with a lot of equal share of market.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the last of these type of deals that we're going to end up doing. Certainly, under this set of rules, our expectation is we're all looking one way or another. And even if it doesn't change, we'll probably still abide by the new order of our senses that clearly the direction all the buildings are there. So we're working. It's not ideal.
I think I prefaced my remarks with that. It just for me is not.
Yeah.
And you know, you can talk me down, and I see the value of doing it. At the same time, I'm looking at all these people who are working in service type jobs who can no longer live in Austin and are moving into the Del Valle area and the things we serve. And there's really nothing now, according to what we're saying, that's within their affordability, of their rent.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on where it says 80% APY, it's really from 61% to 80%. So it is going to capture those that are below 80%. We just can't go over 80% on those units.
Okay. I just want to express my concern. I just pray that we won't be looking at a lot of other things coming to structure.
Again, I just, you know, the unequal with Sam said, you think about a long run 30, you know, 2 years ago, there was really nothing out there. And what has developed out there has been single family homes, no rental, and now you get all these businesses that are starting to pop up.
Yeah.
And so you can't afford to buy a house.
It's going to be a perfect storm.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing helped us is. I mean, I think the thing in my mind is we're getting out there early before all of a sudden everybody else gets out there. So by getting out there early with this, it helps us sort of get an anchor in there in terms of having something that provides some affordability, but it gets us at that area grows, there'll be more houses, but there'll be other folks who want to develop out there in this area. And so while this is pretty often, as you go further, I think it will become more expensive. You know, the city's utilities are not out there, and they start calling them I'm saying from that experience, having worked on the field of the city to try to drag all the utilities out there to set up a district that pays for it, and that didn't pass. And so people will go further east of this, it's going to be possible here because. We're having to pay the city to drag those utilities out there. There's not a lot of, there are a couple of private water companies, but you still got to have sewer and you got to have electricity, you know, police, fire, all this stuff has to be paid for. I mean, it's going to fall over back to those homeowners because it's going to be hard for them to set up before the grant.
I just don't know what these people are going to do.
I think your instincts are really good. This is why we spent a lot of time with staff while talking about, you know, this project. Had it not been due for other type like site, but had it not been, under consideration of using a different structure, we probably would not have brought it forward yet. Just by way of comparison, this structure has been why it looks like you're just slapping that. The Houston area has already been 100 of these deals. Just in the last 6 months, which is 160.
Sorry, it did 41 on one at one.
We called down.
Let's be sure this is a public meeting. We don't want to.
It's wrong.
So the legislation got in. They saw a lot of abuses with this program. They wanted to reform it. The uneasiness that you have is not a natural because there are a lot of folks who are very uneasy about it, but it is a tool in the toolbox and it does serve as perfectly for us when there's kind of nothing else. But when we kind of need it, and hopefully the legislation will be approved and the program will be reformed, so it'll be a better tool in terms of the residents.
Chris, I think one other thing I'm talking to Ron, I think there's not a big, also the visible development partners, they will not be a whole year on the seals, and they've been fairly good to work with. And as we begin to talk to them, I think we can share some of these concerns, see how we can maybe do a little bit more to try to address some of the concerns. Yeah. I don't think we can formalize that by any stretch of the law, but I think we can look at.
Well, I just had to raise my concern.
Yes.
And hope that we don't do so many more of these that I really have to go against it. Because I'm for getting as much affordability in housing as we can. So all these projects I've supported not without quite for you, but generous people support. And Chuck, I'm taking your role there.
And we're playing the whole set. We're only seeing fire. So we're unviable. And
you said there was a tax credit development in this area. Who's the developer on that? What's the occupancy?
It's Warren Harrington, and I think they're just now.
Okay, is it 100% affordable or is it also there's a market?
No, it's 100% affordable. I think there's a couple of other moving closer to McKinney Fall. No, sorry, what, Sarah? There's some closer to McKinney Fall, a little more north of where this is, but not too far. But as far as this in the area, there's not.
Commissioners, we would ask your approval of resolution number.
So moved.
Second. Any more discussion? All those in favor? Any opposed? That includes the business of the South Congress PSC.
I move your amendment.
And 220. That in the favor. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Now are we going back to Austin Board of Housing Corporate?
Yeah.
Okay. The first item on the agenda for Austin. For Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, we call the order. We call the order. The certified forum, is there any public communication?
No.
Or how many APC?
No.
Okay. Moving on to the consent agenda, which is to approve the minutes of April 3rd, 2023. Do I hear a motion? So, Mary Lewis, Carl seconds. All in favor? Any opposed? Okay.
I do have a question. I'm not opposing the minutes. I have to know.
Okay.
My question occurs on page 51, and we're talking about DPA will use the funds to purchase the land with effective no TIF. And then due to the fact that this is a two-phase project, the parcel will be made there's no such word, I don't think. And I think you guys just made that word up. And I don't know how many syllables that I think. But I cannot pronounce it. It's condo minimized. What does that mean?
Well, it means that the parcel is a large parcel.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to do it, and we want to build the property in two phases. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that we take the second phase back to you for approval. Each phase back to
condominium.
So the reason that we are doing this at the condominium complex is so that we don't have to deal with the city to split this into two lots. It just says that one lot,
mm-hmm.
But you can it allows you to do two phases.
But we're not going into condominiums.
No, we're not doing condominiums. It's going to be two units.
Mm-hmm.
Phase one is unit A.
It's going to be like a rent unit that you're calling a condo.
It'll be an other regime structure inside that. It'll be a regular.
Uh-huh.
All this does is it helps us get through the city process a lot quicker and a lot faster. It's a lot of money. So you don't have to go back and have the lots actually platted, replatted, resubdivided, or all of the rigmarole that they do behind the scenes to get that all approved. Go back and land a conditional back to the city council.
And you think that is just by calling something and condoing it?
Well, it's also cheaper because you have to do separate surveys and all this stuff. Where in the condominium structure, you have an owner that owns the village, and then you have owners of the units on top. So that's basically what we're doing. Comp is going to own the dirt, and then condominium unit A is phase one with 300 whatever apartment units. And then phase two is the second phase of that.
This one unit there. You're moving in phase one or creating in phase one and then creating another one in phase two.
It's the partnership that's building the apartment complex.
Which does.
Yeah.
There's no.
We're making a lot of
problems with that. I think we need to create a dictionary.
It's pretty complicated.
I just think that we've done this before. Yeah.
We did on our minis, actually. It's just because it's a large tract of land that we're buying, and to go in and subdivide and everything, it not only takes time, it's very extensive. You have to go to city council and get approved.
We didn't bring the second phase back in, so before we approved, we wanted the ability to say, well, we'll do phase one, and then we'll see how it turns out. And then meeting our expectations where we are, then we'll look forward to phase two, but then we'll bring that back to you again.
Did you, in your planning, did you can build in a certain amount of time between phase one and phase two, where there's an opportunity to assess the issues?
Yes, ma'am. And we also, we're more than likely using the same builder to do it. So it kind of works out better because they're able to get almost everything complete and then just do everybody over.
Well, thank you for that explanation.
Okay. So, item number two.
Not finished.
Okay. Which is approval of a resolution, well, discussion of resolution 00231. And it's for the RET at, it's the RET.
Okay.
And so, there are several items to consider. One is facilitated development of the RET, called AAHC. It's wholly owned subsidiary, executed documents, and number three, entering to develop the instinct for the project, and then number four, calls AAHC in partnership to execute all documents that are necessary for development of the project. So with that, Suzanne, this one is yours also.
Thank you, Chair. I hope you all like this one a little bit better because I don't want to go there.
What is the name of that?
That one, our partner should make that.
Okay.
I think of Brett Butler, God in the wind, but I don't know.
I was wondering.
So just a little bit of background, I did present this back in February of 2023. As we've been seeing, the bond market has been really tightened up and it's oversubscribed, and this is exactly why. Zydeco, a local developer, received a bond allocation in the bond lottery at the end of 2022. When they got the bond allocation, they were like, oh, we have to partner this with tax credits. We don't know how to do this. So that's a little that for me, everybody wants to put their applications in for offer, so then they don't know what they're doing. So they put it up for sale, and they're able to sell the land and the offer. Or the bond really knows what the land. Several developers approached us about partnering on this with a different, with workforce housing, that but they couldn't get its pencil out. Megan Latch with OSTA, who we partnered with on three other deals. Her and Lisa Stevens at Sage Road came to us and said, we weren't going to do any bond deals in Austin, but this one is too good to pass up. The affordability is very deep. We think we can make it work. So in February, we came to you to ask for a resolution to do a tax credit application. This property is a 5-acre tract located at 1000 East Jacob Lane. That's kind of in the Tech Ridge area. There's a lot of single family residents. There's a lot of retail, restaurants, office manufacturing. It serves Pflugerville ISD, unfortunately, but it's still in the Austin. I'm going up that because I would like to have it as Austin ISD, but it's still in the city of Austin. Those schools are Copperfield Elementary, Westview Middle School, and Conway High School. This one is going to serve 250 families, and with affordability at 30%, 50%, 60%, and 80% very median income, with 1 to 3 bedrooms. I have the breakdown in your backup, and we're really excited about
anything that's looking this good for these prices. Is this something?
We do have some that have some deep affordability, but right now it's extremely, extremely hard to get this one to pencil out to be visible financially. Not only did we have to do the bonds, we are doing a loan through the Community Bank of Texas, which is, I guess, just got merged with Stellar Bank. And we're having to do what they call a taxable tail, which is kind of a gap one, for an extra $12 million. We're getting rental housing development assistance from the city of Austin in the amount of $6.4 million. We are getting Home American Rescue Plan funds from TDHCA in the amount of $2.375 million. And we also have an application into the Federal Home Loan Bank for $850,000. So we've got so many layers just to make this work because of the affordability. It's just, and I have to give 100% of the credit for all the hard work that Megan is, mostly that Megan, doing all of this, going out there and fighting to get all these funds. And
there's another issue too. We're talking 5-acre tract of land. So what kind of density is this building?
It's going to be a 4-story, so it will have elevators, but 5 acres,
well, see, having
it's not going to have a lot of our building hills.
I know personally, the 5 acres,
yeah,
like knee by knee, foot by foot.
Yeah,
it really is still going to be quite dense.
Well, and it goes to tell you how expensive it is to build here. And, even that 5 acres is like $6 million. And, that's a heavy chunk for this project. But I'm excited about this. And we did apply through our housing choice voucher program for AHVASH vouchers to go with this. So we'll see if we're able to get approval on that as well. This will, if you approve this will be the last time you see it. We will go ahead and head towards closing. The bond issuer is TDHCA because, the bond allocation came with the property, so we weren't able to go in as issuer. And then we're working with Hudson Housing for the tax credits. And we worked with them once before and they're really requesting.
Susan, you said this was made in the point of the bond deal, but they decided otherwise.
Well, I think they thought it was it. We've gotten so many calls from developers that have no idea even how to spell bonds or tax credits, but they want to do affordable housing and they want to get into this. And I think they applied for the bonds without realizing how hard it is to pair it with tax credits. And that's the only way to use them. And all the compliance and all the hurdles that you have to jump through for the tax credit program. And also, I mean, you have to have experience, and they don't have experience. That's one thing TDHCA does require. So
so it was less about often because you said they didn't want to go bond deal in Austin. Someone knew like they were Austin or they didn't do a bond deal in it.
It's just out of their wheelhouse. So they just never, it's a little too much for them to do.
All right.
That was the original. That's not Safebook, though.
No, not Safebook.
Facebook said they didn't want to do a bond.
So whoever Zydeco, the original people that got the original
language. Yeah.
And then we were approached by other developers that wanted to not do it either, not do a bond deal either. They wanted to split it to a workforce housing, but they couldn't get anything to work. Without doing tax credits.
Okay.
And even that way, they, you know, a lot of the developers do not have the reputation that Megan and Lisa have to get the RHDA funds from the city and from TDA, you know, the fund from TDHCA. So it's really an honor for me to be able to work with them. And to get a project like this on the ground.
Now, when we see all of the work that went in, did we get able to get this level of affordability?
I mean, that's kind of why you see that how many levels of money we've got to put in to get to this affordability. It's, I mean, we saw it on Rosewood trying to redevelop it, and it's very difficult.
And we're getting opportunities to see that as the voucher to the project. Well, I don't know if I can serve out here in the channel. Commissioner Ruth, did you get a motion to approve?
I have a motion. Any more discussion? All those in favor, approving resolution 00231. By the same time.
Aye.
Any opposed? Yes, thank you. The next item for all of the Affordable Housing Corporation is item number 3. And we will to approve resolution 00232. It's a facility application of the bridge at 10th Crossing. Cause AAHC's limited subsidiary to cause the acquisition and development test, and then getting all documents necessary to facilitate the transaction. With that, Mr. Oval.
Thank you. You'll hear me refer to this or be read the summary. All the actual name as it is today is called Tech Junction Apartments. We're going to be changing that name. Should we approve this and get the closing, will be called the bridge at 10 Crossing. So as I refer to the property at Tech Junction, it's only temporary.
That's more classy.
It's a nicer name. this is an opportunity that we're presented with our partners at Bell Run. You've heard me use Bell Run saying many, many times before. This will be our 17th purchase together. We've been partners. It's a 288 unit apartment complex that sits on Desktop Road. You see that up there on your map. It was built in 2022 and sits on 8.98 acres. I can go through the amenities with you, but you know, it's a new project. They're pretty much the same as you've seen across a lot of our properties. properties with the resorts out of Golden Mile in the Indiana, a really nice clubhouse and big gathering space. It's got a very big conference room, full kitchen and coffee bar. It's got a real beautiful business center in it too. I apologize we weren't able to do a tour, but this was on our tour. I was going to show it to you yesterday. I'm looking forward to doing it as soon as you all are ready to.
In the fall. Not July at all.
This is in Austin, but it does feed again into those schools. It feeds into Belco Elementary, Middle School, and Conley High School. It's a very, very nice asset. It consists of 162 one bedrooms, 102 two bedrooms, two baths, and 24 three bedrooms, two baths. When we did our lease side, and I wanted to like share that as I've been doing on every deal, if you notice, we haven't been bringing in a lot to the new acquisition. It's been a very tough market. We've been very conservative, very careful, making sure that we can still maintain affordability here, but also be smart and objective and not overpaying for things that that we shouldn't be doing. So we were very careful in this property, but the lease lot was very enticing to us. It's a beautiful asset, and it caters to about 60% of the property is really professional tech, all in that area. But we do have, as sits today, and as a developer, I always promise that the affordability levels for stable residents that are there. We have 8 units at 30%, we have 12 units at 40% AMI, we have 15 units at 50% AMI. 44 units at 60% AMI, and only 68 units at 80% AMI. So there's some already deep affordability in Rome that's already preserved. And keep in mind when we do these deals, it's Dan presented the actual law said all we have to do is 50% at 80. We don't even have to do 10% at 60, technically. So partners have been great at using out to do much more. And also preserving what's there. I think that's really important. A lot of people will come in. The first thing they're going to do is take those 30% units and then get them out because they don't make sense. They're going to raise them. Even if they raise them, they eat. They're going to get displaced. So we've committed to keep those there. We've underwritten it that way. So we're very excited. So 147 units at 288 are already under 80% in line, but most of those at 16
and 12. Why this property was built in 2022 and came up for sale like as soon as it was built? Wow.
I think when you talk to the sellers, this is an insurance company, and I think you're just seeing a reflection in the developers, taking a little bit of skin off the table and moving on to other areas. I think it was more like merchant, the commercial builder. When they build, they lease up, they get stabilized, and then they walk off. They don't want to operate. They don't want to be an operator. Nobody wants to operate things. They've got to develop the fee, they got their construction fee, they got their overhead, all those costs paid for, and then they turn around. And this was a very, very hard negotiation on our part, and that we held steadfast to our pricing. This was a property way back 7 or 9 months ago that was probably well over $300,000 before we're in at for about $252,000 now. We got some great consideration that you see that quite often. There's a lot of merchant builders here that are building and making. It was a great time. Everybody was buying, they were making huge amounts of profit. So they're taking the money off the table, not as much as they thought they were.
No, did they come to you and
this property was actually off market and it came to our partners at Bell Rock to present it to them. And what happens quite often is the market here in Austin knows how active we are, and they know our partners, and they know our ability to close. And so they seek out, people, the partners and teams that will that they know will carry forward, complete the transaction. And every once in a while we get a little bit of a win, but when we did our call interview with them, they were very, very taken back that the affordability component of the residents there were going to be preserved. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that doesn't mean it owns anybody, but sometimes it does help. Mm-hmm. And so they were very, very sensitive to that. We were really, really, really pleased. We're going to put a little over $20 million on this. They will loan amount after exceed $15 million. It's a probably somewhere we buy the app will be locked with this approval in a very short period of time. This will close at the end of July. Like I said, it's a great opportunity for us to be able to preserve the units there. And continue that trend, I think there's still room to grow. What's good about it is now when we look at the market, we've seen some of these rents dropping, or even the market rents are hitting 85-90% of AMI, where they weren't like that 20 months ago. But in 2 years, these units at these levels will be preserved when we're seeing rents again hitting $400 a month increases, when this market turns once again. So I think, again, we're a little bit ahead of the curve to preserve these units' affordability. Belvoir's committed to long-term holds with us. Minimum 15 years is what they're looking at. So that's fantastic to have a long-term partner and meet the same affordable demand or strategies that we have that we're excited about. So I hope that answers some of your questions. It's been great. We've got several aspects around here as well. I think Steve, you'll remember the Lucent is there, and the Bridge Davenport is there. So we've got some good assets here. We know the market very, very well. They're very confident about this. What's occupied right now at about 96, I think, when I wrote this, a little higher. I think it was 96. So I think that's where we are right now, so more than 95, 96. So it's a pretty stable property. Great tenant mix. It's great. It's a beautiful property.
Commissioner, can I ask your approval of resolution 232?
Move approval.
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thanks.
Question on when you get to 25 fields, is there like in Canada, is there going to be family state or, what happens at 25?
Then we go to 26.
But that's all good. It's only maybe even many people.
I do want to say on that, I do want to share some demographics with you in the portfolio. I think maybe now's not the time, just because maybe on our, we were planning on talking a little bit to some of this too, and I think it would help in the answers that we were concerned with the questions. And what's been happening in our local and manage it in terms of naturally occurring property. Mm-hmm. If I told you the law required even the acquisition of 50% of the units to 80, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And if I told you that we were running at about 65% of the property below 80, with about half, if not more, of those at 60,
I would be very happy.
You would see how, and I think. There's a way you got to think about financing and being able to operate.
Yeah.
And all that means is, someone may say, I'm making this big chunk of return, but in essence, they know they're not because they're going to go this way. But it's got to be under bridges to make these numbers. And that's the challenge to being as a new construction because it's so unpredictable. This is predictable building, it is and occupied. She's got a much more difficult job ahead of her, and lenders know that, and investors know that, and it's a difficult process, and they don't like, they like to see higher underwriting numbers. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they have to operate that way once the deal's done. And I think what we can show you and what we have now would help you understand how that process happens. Mm-hmm. You've got 20 years of data, right, that we've operated on. You can see them with the change before these properties started to where they are now.
I just find it mind-boggling that we have a cumulative such a huge portfolio in such a short period of time. And I know I owe we owe it all to you guys who worked so hard on this stuff. And I'm going to start with questions, but I do understand that if we look at the whole, that this is fantastic. I mean, good to have asked for the human.
Richard Lewis suggests adjourning the cost of affordable housing corporate.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Rude, you just need to chair. Any more discussion? Let's see, did we approve this? And was that a motion to adjourn?
I made a motion to approve it. You made a second. You have to think about it.
Okay. For the resolution. Or to the adjourn meeting.
The resolution was approved. Yes, it was Tyra, then Carl.
Then someone made a motion to the adjourn meeting.
Carl and then Mary.
Chair, was that you? All right. And so at 2:36 or 2:46, and we'll adjourn the meeting or else. Thank you all. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Appreciate you know, hard work. This is a great means to the resolution.
Which are very Commissioners, return to the population. You just voted on, the general health care and violated the item for 3, which is resolution number 7807. So, what do you think here? All actions that are still in the zone for the rest.
Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying
aye.
Any opposed, hearing none, motion carries. Item number 6, resolution number 2810 to approve.
Wait, I've got 4 and 5.
I want to come back to facilitate the development of airport crossing and multi-family housing development that we've already approved and the other amendments. So the chair will approve, will then have motion approved item number 6.
Second.
Motion made. Second. Second by Commissioner Solo. Further discussion. Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. The item is 5, which is to approve the bridge at Tech Crossing and Park Heights. We just discussed.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Carrington, your second.
Second
by Commissioner Stolen. Any further discussion here? None. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. The motion carries. And number 4, which is resolution number 2808, authorizing PACA to contract phase 8 veteran affairs supportive housing vouchers and response to request for proposal issued on April 27, 2023,
and this starts the so it's very straightforward. We're just asking for a motion to approve the 8 batch vouchers for the rep. We go up for put out an RFP for 85 batch vouchers on the 27th of April. We placed it on May 29th. We only received one proposal, which was this one. Because Austin Affordable is a general partner, we still will have to give, have approval to review our process. But that would be known, but it's in there in the resolution, that being a contingency. And I'll have any questions.
We're glad to have that funding.
Yes, we really, as I said, even out of the goals, and we're really looking to try to get others to move on a project based on that. I was going to have a hard time, So we are going to, the plans are to reissue the proposal and keep it open until we get the full number that we need.
So with that, if there are no questions from Ms. Garcia, the chair will entertain a motion to approve item number 4, which is resolution number 2808, 4-8, project advance vouchers. Motion by Commissioner Dahl, second by Commissioner Solo. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
I'd like to give a quick report to the IFSC. Our team until August, going to ask Ms. Chen to come forward and
Let me just make a request. We've had the staff done a really great job this year with all the challenges that we've had with the fire, the winter storm. Narrow is having a summer symposium coming up. Registration numbers are lagging. And so I would ask Mr. Gerber to consider identifying 10 employees that we could pay very expensive to get out.
We're, Lisa and I are, we're talking about that. We're trying to identify the staff.
It begins. The committee's meetings begin on a Thursday. The conference is Friday and Saturday.
Ms. Gannon, do you want to follow? Do you want to share anything more in finding the report?
I want to say that we have made financial strong, and next fall meeting, I'll bring our new budget from the urgency that we are doing and how we invest our unrestricted reserve, our funding. So, but I want to kind of, as you can see, that we separate the financial report into two different reports based on their fiscal year end. Then one is based on is our PBI property. So that's the first one is for the our PBI properties, all the 10 properties right now currently is managed by Hawkeye. I'm not including all those that the road, the farmers, the village. That's a lot of different properties that we manage by our so as you can see, we have the total we have after we have transferred the $412,000 from our subsidiary like $252,000. That is the amount we have required to pay for our debt service, pay for our expenses. We are very blessed from here. We've done such a wonderful, wonderful job. Just announcing that all that such a high performer and all the high 90 from the React Infection Score and 94. That's our December year end for the report only considered for the first 4 months. Operation from January to April. The second set of the financial reporting in your package is all the other entities, the subsidiaries, in the office. Everyone that has a fiscal year end as March 31st, every year. So this one is only for the first month of the new fiscal year of the 2024. And you can see on the very first report. Is the summary overall? We just for 1 month we have $713,262 surplus. And the level is lower than what we budgeted for, but mainly the reason is because of AHT. We recommend that we use the distribution, the management fee on a quarterly basis. So, in a way, we don't have any of those income reported. That's why it's below, but I'm 100% sure when people bring all the money later on in the quarter, we are going to be over our budget. And we are very confident we are going to be over this year, what I can see so far. So I just want to let you know we are a little below. But on the budget, it's not because we don't, it's because of our accounting resolution. When we recognize the revenue, because we don't know how much we are going to get. From the AMC, mainly from AMC, which we can use it on a quarterly basis. Okay, so like I say, we are very strong and we invest our any of our reserve in the most of the 90%, more than 90% of that in the treasury bills. So they are 100% insured and guaranteed by the federal government. So I think that's the secure that. Investment products we can get for public markets. So and we are very happy to carry all our financial money. Oh, I mean, a lot of people ask me, do we have money to pay for land at issue? So I think we need to know, like I say, the like we talk about we need a few more business. This is really a good thing open that we can do so much about the app. Any question about the financial report?
Margaret, we spread our investments among several financial institutions, or do we consolidate in one? Sort of how do we do that?
So, mainly we remember I asked the board about a little over a year ago. We kind of work with the JP Morgan Chase, their investment, their security. So we kind of have an agreement. They help us find the best product. And because based on the HUD requirement, based on our policy, based on the state regulation, so we pretty much use them to help their help assistance to find the best products for us. So right now, and because the limitation on our investment, so we have very limited investment. So like I say, not over 90% of our investment are in the U.S. treasury bills. Yes, we also still have some money in the money market account. We also have money in our saving account, our checking account for our working capital. And with the money market account actually run, and then we are going to meet with our local bank. We call the asset a good partners with us, with the Horizon Bank. They right now has they have a very, very good CD. We might shift a little bit to the CD because I think with the interest rate today, I talked to Mike already about all this. We probably is going to go a little bit longer term in the investment. Why not we are staying about 3 to 6 months, the federal bill, but we are going to shift it to maybe a year or 6 months to 8 months in that way. So we are going to adjust that whatever the trend in the market right now. Also, yes, to answer your question, we do still have money market accounts, still have more saving accounts. That to give our funds, and we do have a plan to maybe kind of find those the CDs. So, but I can guarantee that 100% of our investment, our deposits are all insured. We don't have any of the issue that our funds are not sure, are not secure. Okay, so that everything is 100%, even every penny.
So if I understand your response to Commissioner Carrington, like that you did this with Chase,
yes,
and we did this with Horizon, those were two.
With the investment, yes, but for the treasury bill, for those I call true investment, that because those are kind of a little bit more longer term. That mainly was JP Morgan Chase. Horizon Bank, and then we also deal with JP Morgan Chase Bank. That one we deal with JP Morgan Security Okay, so that's two different companies, even in all under. So the Horizons Bank, is because they is a regional local bank, they don't really have those products they can help us. So, but they do all the CDs, money market fund with a higher return in interest rate. So that's what we also are going to looking at. So,
okay. So let me, I think this is where you're going. I mean, obviously, we're concerned about everything that goes on in the banking world. We see a number of banks that they've gone under, and their customers have hurt because they had money that was above the federal insured limit. Do you know of any housing authorities that have run into problems because they were banking with some of those banks that have problems?
I have not heard about anything, and but I think because the way the operation, especially we not just have the required for housing, but the funds need to be whoever the institution, financial institution we work with, they need to, you have to enter this kind of agreement with them. They have to enter this agreement with housing authority to ensure, plus, you know, secure and all the deposit. Okay, because when we do that, it's a kind of a three-way agreement that even if you have only pure public housing sector, which is most of the housing authority funded, you have to agree. That's a three-way agreement between housing authority and the financial institution and HUD. So HUD can, if they see any problem, they can come in to take the money without housing authority not agree. So that's all what I'm trying to say is that you have the, all the financial institutions working with housing authority, they need to provide. Okay, so even just using Horizons Bank, they on a daily basis, right now it's on average about $25 million secure the insurance for not just HUD, not just AHC's money, also including our subsidiaries. All our deposits are all insured. We have the term is later on credit, but it's just we can write a check. I can draw down the money anytime I want to up to $25 million any day if we have a problem. Basically, it's already kind of the bank already set aside funds for us. The same as all the other banks, but it was really the only one we could not have. Into the federal bill, but the federal bill is from the federal government, so okay.
We're going to make the case to policymakers that we need to receive congressional protection because HUD continues not to be compliant with law. So we're working, continue to receive really disappointing signs from HUD, where there just seems to be an effort to undermine the annual contributions contract that all public gas authorities have. And this has been an issue at the national level where all of our industry associations, not just NARA, CLIMA, and FADA, have all set up fighting against HUD's wanting to do away with the annual contributions contract. And instead, go to some other vehicle, some kind of cooperative agreement or other type of agreement. They finally backed off of that for PHAs, but they have continued to maintain that they need to use that vehicle for this. And to quote the head of the Council of Large Public Housing Authorities, it's unacceptable. And she said she thought it was an existential threat, that it's just the first step of probably trying to chip away at this government-to-government relationship that exists between federal government, which pays for programs, and local governments, state government, which administer those programs. So we've got to fight on our hands, and I'm disappointed that after making such great progress last year, and the appropriations bill contains such clear language, but don't do that. that, you know, 6 months later were in another dogfight and had a problem to be able to make the case to Congress that the type of contract we have couldn't be made and wanted to spearhead that effort. This is the latest one of, you know, a number of different types of news behind us that we've got, but anything you want to highlight?
The only other things development since last time we met is that the contract at that time was through 7/31 of this year, 23. Since we last met, they did extend this to January 31st, 24. And there is potentially beyond that still 2 more 6 month extensions that are potentially going to So, from a budget perspective, yeah, I mean, we felt pretty good this year as it was, but certainly with an extension to 131 before, and then perhaps more and really the shape in that regard. Nothing really more to add that might have been characterized and that we're trying to capture in the behinds and other information that we're providing.
So this is ahead. And we're going to keep pushing on Saturday contest and have you work through the council. Let me change here and ask before we come up. Before we were anyone that has to make serving policy looking out through the end of July. So you'll see him around us where we have the number of events and have been helping us with a variety of different tasks. Who was a policy fellow serving as a graduate student at George Mason University up in the DC area. I think my majority are from one of the other. But I think we have a couple of interns that are serving at ACC and other schools. We're trying to expand our programs. So I hope we will bring some of those other students in as well. So it'd be good, you know. So, or they want to, if you talk to the board, tell them what you want
to do. Sure. So yeah, my name should probably really derive exactly completely from your counsel. I'm here for the summer, like I said, working as a policy fellow right now on the LEPO and we work for SHCC on compliance with language and mission board discrimination under Title VI of United States of Civil Rights Act of 1964, and also with my on a few issues regarding common based doctors, homelessness, and gas on Santa Rita branding, moving forward as the government has developed and rehabilitation. My background. I've been at Rutgers University. I went for my undergrad, but I'm there now for my master's in public policy. I've studied a number of areas because I'm really bad at thing. Most of that time has been spent on Eastern Europe, Southeast Asia, and democratic institutions with my work. Professionally, it's been a little bit more varied. Most of my work is domestic. On the official nominations earlier in the Biden administration, not in the Biden administration, but the Biden administration. I was the communications director for Grad District of Fairfax, Virginia. I've also had a training on Capitol and in Tom Brown as well. So I'm very happy to be here. I really appreciate this opportunity. I also appreciate the opportunity to address you all. And I look forward to the next month and a half, I think, that's left here. I want to do as much good as I can with the school time as I have this scan of memory. Terrible concentration at ADHD allows. I've had the opportunity to do a lot so far. I'm not really proud of that, but proud of the organization that I'm going to this summer. It's been a very busy 3 weeks, but you know, I'm not as busy as everything you guys do the rest of the time when, throughout this throughout the year. I'm really appreciative of the email I got for.
Well, nice to have you work with Adina and Santa Rita. You know, Santa Rita really messes with the development work that we do. And so we're gearing up with the residents there and good job to solo and we've been, of course, with it, kind of helping lead that charge. But yeah, trying to, once we do the roads, of course, you know, and it's not the roads, but there are several iterations of what that we bring to bring folks along, bringing me along. And so we're always helping us kind of shape the version for the family. That, but there was a lot of excitement. Beyond that, we're getting our conference, Carl and I'll be there for a couple of days, hopefully Chris Capistolo and others. So we'll have to be well represented at that event. And I think some of you are going off to the NARO in Southwest Arkansas, Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Including so Lisa will be representing us there. Lisa, for your information, starting October, becomes the new president. Which we're very excited about. Very, very good by that. She was and beyond that, we're looking forward to seeing you all in August. And the next board meeting is set for August 15th. It's set for either at, I'm sorry, August 17th. We have a committee meeting scheduled that morning as well. It's kind of a good time. I'd like to know if you all have interest in getting some additional policy briefing, and have a few of y'all come in for that earlier session. We can do that.
This is on August 17th.
On the 17th.
At what time do you want?
So I have it at 10:30. Just all on 10:30. There may be some value in going, you know, getting out. We haven't been at some of the properties in quite a while, and I've heard that we do have the. Yeah.
Should be August in the month of August. Maybe.
Yeah,
I'll be back in time for the meeting.
Okay.
We were kind of talking once, and I think our preference in terms of taking a tour and going to see some either probably
with it.
Yeah, September, October time, right? It's a little
bit. Let's face it, we're wimps. We do not like the hot day.
Well, no, we're not wimps.
Well,
we are at a point in our lives where we think about the weather and how it impacts our body. And when we were 12 and 15, being out in the
100 degrees. We were resilient.
Yeah, but now we're.
That's not part of my vocabulary.
So probably look at September, October, and maybe split up and do. Because if you want to go to multiple properties in order to give yourself time there, want to go and see it and understand and get a feel for probably how to do this.
I'll just say about hosting the meeting at other properties, but we have
very good. Even a close live is another property that's five sponsors.
So we'll keep that open and I'll get council to know if we might want to go.
And
then
it's simply an end of
the break. I have to do a public meeting at August 4th meeting, and I'm happy mail the notice about
30 days before. Well, that's very important. Okay, we'll figure it out. But thank you for living 17. I appreciate you all for being here. And we have to check if it was a little weather, but get there.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that upcoming event at the ballpark.
Oh yeah, we're looking at we what day is that? The 23rd?
26th, I think.
26th.
Yeah, on Sunday, August 26th.
Saturday,
August 26th. We will send it to you all. We're gonna get the ballpark. Where it is, I think we all were part of that in the past when we saw the Red Light Express. So we'd love to be able to come. We'll send
it. Playing Utah.
We're playing Utah. We'll advise you of that. But So that was converting.
Yeah.
Yeah, 705 is.
So we need to post it, but it should be a. And we're at it. That's not fair for them to invite their families and the support. Won't be the mandatory fund it was today, but it will yeah, so, but and please don't forget to bring the signal here on this or people that are wanting to want to be for the event. Roger, anything else for Congress?
If then, the chair will intend a motion to appear.
No, I'm rapid.
But Commissioner Chair, when you say that, I'm going to thank Paul, who's been discussing here and that, all of it, Paul, in time.
Aye.
Any of those here and that, we have a motion carried that we'll adjourn at 16 p.m. Thursday, June 15th. Enjoy.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And I sent you the $9.
I have the cash upstairs. I have it all put for you. Let me get it for you. Yeah, you want to turn it? I was like, I don't know. I'm gonna go get some carrot and
sure.
Yeah,
let me
go
get
I'm going to be part of the